Welcome to Move Wild Podcast. I'm your host, Jake Clapson. The aim of this podcast is to explore, learn, and spread the message of rewilding and natural movement so that we as humans can live in more alignment with our nature and reclaim what it means to be fully alive. The modern world has stripped away so much that used to nourish our mind, body, and soul. This podcast will help illuminate how we can reclaim and restore our innate, wild, capable, and strong spirit. Thanks for joining me on this journey. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Move Wild Podcast. So on today's show, I have the pleasure of sharing a conversation that I recorded with Simon Takor. So Simon is a movement teacher, lifelong practitioner, and explorer of body-mind traditions from around the world. He has an academic background in medical science, anthropology, evolutionary biology, and ecology. Movement disciplines including yoga, Chinese, internal martial arts, capoeira, Angola, Feldenkrais, Buto, wrestling, and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. A decade-long career as a bodyworker, therapist, and rehabilitation practitioner, extensive practice and research into Buddhist, yogic, and Taoist meditation, and an ongoing exploration of bushcraft, survival skills, and rewilding. Ancestral movement is the synthesis of this experience, an ongoing exploration of human embodiment within the context of biological evolution, ecology, and the shared ancestry of all living beings through deep time. This was truly a mind-expanding conversation. Looking forward to seeing what you guys think. So let's jump into today's episode with Simon and catch me after the show for what's going on with me.
So welcome, Simon. Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Nice one. Thanks, Jake.
Yeah. So you have a big history specifically with movement. I'd like to get a little bit of your backstory of how you got into movement and what you do today and the path that has led you to what you do today.
Okay, sure. So what got me into movement, I guess, I grew up in a town called Dunedin in the South Island of New Zealand. It was like, it's a town that's sort of, it's very foresty town. Like, it's built in the crater of an extinct volcano, and it's so it's got this lip of sort of hills which are covered in forest, and little pockets of forest through it. And so I kind of grew up running around in the forest in Dunedin, which was a good place to grow up. And amongst that, I think, well, my dad had a daily movement practice, like right from, I don't know when he got into it, but he's always had a daily movement practice, and he would like do his push-ups and do some of these classic sort of Indian, what they sometimes call Hindu squats or duns and betaks, Hindu squats, and, you know, all these different like little exercises that he'd do every day. And so I sort of grew up seeing my dad do that, and like, he'd be like, you know, come and join in. And so sometimes we'd do some push-ups and whatnot. And so I guess I had an idea that like movement and training were stuff that you could do, as well as obviously running around in the bush and climbing trees and all that stuff. And then really early on as well, probably when I was like 3 years old, my dad, like, who's never done a day of yoga in his whole life, and doesn't really know anything about yoga beyond Indian popular culture and mythology, but he saw me sitting cross-legged and was like, oh, you know, can you put one foot on your opposite thigh like this? And I was like, okay. And then he's like, and can you put your other foot on the other thigh like this? And I was like, yeah, no worries, and like easily put myself into the full lotus posture. And he sort of started having a little chuckle, and it's like, now close your eyes and put your hands on your knees like this. And then he starts laughing, and then was like, oh, you know, you should get into yoga. And I was like, oh, what's yoga? And, you know, didn't find a yoga teacher for another 18 years, but again, from the age of like 4 or 3 or something, got introduced to this thing called yoga, and found, you know, saw images of these weird dreadlocked dudes in the forest in India, like with their feet tucked behind their head, like focusing on their third eye and to try and conjure up magical powers. And, you know, as a 5-year-old, I was like, oh, magical powers, eh? Like, that sounds cool. And then, you know, so then another couple of influences would be like one of my best friends when I was 4, his dad was a black belt in judo and taught judo. And so me and my little 4 and 5-year-old friends, we all toddled off to judo class and started doing karate and judo as little kids. And then we all got into like fantasy novels. So kind of that mix of like martial arts, yoga, fantasy novels, running around in the forest, and then the concept of daily exercise practice from my dad, I think that kind of set me off like right from the beginning of like, oh, you can become a ninja and you can like become like a wizard and like get like mad weapon skills and learn to levitate and be invisible and like, you know, learn the language of the birds and the plants and all that sort of stuff, and it all just kind of joined together to make this like archetypal fantasy character.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, and I kind of never looked back, to be honest. Like, I got a bit distracted there for a while and thought I'd study engineering at university, but then came full circle and was like, no, actually the fantasy characters a bit more appealing. Yeah,
totally. I totally resonate with that. That's great. Yeah. That's awesome. And so you've just been following this path and kind of learning through different practices over your lifetime as like related to movement and related to that idea of like becoming a ninja. Is that correct?
Yeah. Like, you know, I've gone through lots of different phases. But the meditation angle has kind of been a consistent theme through the whole thing, if you know what I mean. So like, I never really got heaps into team sports as a kid. I played a little bit of cricket and a tiny bit of rugby and did a bit of rowing. But I was always like a bit more of a sort of dreamer, and I'd like, you know, wander off into the bush and stare into space. And then, you know, even like, you know, like as I learned to read really young, and I was devouring fantasy novels and kind of looking for portals to other worlds. And, you know, like I was a real little, full on dreamer. And so the meditation stuff just really grabbed me from a really early age. And so I was, I guess, kind of drawn more to some of the esoteric kind of things from early on, you know. So it wasn't like, oh, I liked boxing and did some boxing, but I was really interested in these super esoteric Chinese and Japanese martial arts where they're, you know, awakening their internal energy and, you know, associated with like Buddhist monks and obscure Chinese medicine and acupuncture and all this like stuff that was like, it's like fantasy novel stuff, but in the real world, you know? So, so like, even though I've done lots of things over the years and got into like, you know, medical science and physical therapy and traditional strength training and, you know, all this like much more mainstream stuff, which is really, really awesome, I've still always had that interest and that attraction and that like ongoing practice and research into like meditation and pranayama and some of the more internal practices based around, and you know, like you start off thinking you're going to learn to levitate, and then later on you start to get deeper and deeper and realize that it's actually even more interesting than just being a normal person who can levitate. It's like you're actually getting into nitty-gritty research of the fundamental makeup of the mind and how that interacts with the body, and like what is the body and what is the mind and what is nature and how do all these things interact, and like just the magnificence of it, you know what I mean? Like the getting out of the sense of reality being mundane and going deep enough into it to just actually pay attention to the incredible complexity and miraculousness of reality itself and being a living conscious being. So yeah, that's a bit of a waffly answer, but it's like, yeah, always researching different movement things in different places that I've lived and different places that I've gone. But one of the ongoing themes in my life has been this undercurrent of these beautiful different cultural practices expressed in different cultures, which are researching what it is to be human.
You know what I mean? Interesting. Yeah, that's cool. I love that. And so almost using these practices as a tool to kind of shift your mindset as to how you see yourself as connected to the natural world or the world around you, rather than practicing the movement just for the sake of movement. It's like a way to tap into that meditative state. That's what I'm hearing, at least.
Yeah, like the meditative states, and then just the whole thing of like the, you know, the appreciation for human life and like cultivating the senses themselves, you know, becoming like fine-tuning the senses to pick up on like the language of nature, if you like, the sounds and the smells and the communication going on between the animal and plant worlds and the nonverbal communication realm that's, you know, that humans, like every other creature, are fully embedded in this intricate web of nonverbal communication that spreads through the whole natural world. And and you know what, for me, what it even started with, although I would never have had the language for it, but what it led to definitely has just been a greater and greater sense of like the miraculousness of the living world, including my own body. And then, you know, this sense of worship that comes out of that, of just like, wow, it's amazing. Wow, the body is amazing. Wow, like the growth of an embryo inside the body of a mother is like, you know, it makes my hair stand on end. And it's like, and the story of where we came from, it's like, what, we came from the forests? It's like, we came from the oceans? Like, we came from a giant planet-spanning community of single-celled organisms in the oceans?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, all this sort of stuff, and just being like, fuck, that's amazing. And then movement practice is just exploring lots and lots and lots of different aspects of that with the body, like not just with the mind and the imagination, but with the body itself. Yeah.
Yes. Interesting. And using it as a way to get in touch with that history or that mythology of where we come from, or that story.
And then through that, our relationship with the world, you know, like our relationship with the trees, our relationship with water, our relationship with gravity, with air, like breathing, and with the sun, like with rocks, and you know, like with other creatures, and tracking animals and chasing them, or you know, like anything, like all of these different things. It's like you do leg training, it can be squats, it can be horse stance, it can be, you know, dancing, and you start to appreciate like, wow, legs are really cool, but I can have a lot of fun with my legs. And then you start to do barefoot running to appreciate not just legs and feet, you appreciate the body parts and enjoy them and have fun with them and do cool stuff with them, and also make them healthy and not you know, full of pain and you know, all of that sort of stuff. But also then you start to work out the relationship between the feet and the earth, and the relationship between the legs and, you know, the landscape, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
it's very, you know, we're getting very philosophical straight away, but it's like that is part of my thing of like exploring every part of the body. And then through exploring every part of the body, I start to get a deeper appreciation of the history of each of those different parts of the body and the different landscapes and terrains and activities that those body parts have been engaged with to evolve into the shape that they currently have. And then through that, it takes me deeper into that web of relationships between all the other creatures and all the other landscapes on the planet across time.
Interesting. Yeah, I love that. That's an amazing perspective to have, understanding the relationships and how we relate to the natural world through all that you mentioned. Yeah, it's fascinating. And I like addressing the philosophical side of it, because it's like, that's, we need to address that because we need to understand why we're doing what we're doing, I guess. But on the practical side, what are some of the things that you have been exploring recently in terms of practices, like physical movement practices or meditation practices? What's your journey been more recently?
So like we were saying just before we started recording, I recently got Ross River fever, which is, for those who don't know, a mosquito-borne virus, which is prevalent in some of the warmer areas of Australia. And the main symptoms are like viral arthritis. Like you get, can be quite severe joint pain and fatigue and like ongoing. So I had ongoing extremely severe pain in both of my hips. For a month, and so I'm mostly in the clear now. That came on about three, four months ago. But that up until that point, I had been actually, believe it or not, getting into amongst all my other things, like a bit of daily cardiovascular training. So obviously going for lots of walks and runs, you know, all sorts of training, which would have an elevated heart rate, half an hour to an hour, doing some stuff in the water, because I'm living close to the beach again. And so something I really love doing is practicing the different animal crawls in the shallow water, because I, you know, part of my whole ancestral movement thing is exploring these ancestral movement patterns, basic locomotion patterns, which are kind of embedded in the spine. That's something we could go into later or another time, but anyone who knows me knows that that's something I'm into. And so in the shallow water, something I really like doing is working with those basic side to side or front back spinal undulations. And then as the water gets shallower or deeper, the limbs just naturally fall into different walking patterns and swimming patterns. It's like if the hands and feet are making contact with the sand under the water, then it turns into like a lizard crawl. But then if it gets a little bit deeper and the hands and feet don't reach the bottom, then it becomes almost like a freestyle swimming stroke. And then if the feet touch the ground but the hands can't reach, then it turns into a kind of leaning forward upright human walk, and you get this picture of like, oh cool, it's exactly the same whole body motion, and just depending on which limbs make contact with the ground, these, it manifests naturally in walking or crawling or swimming. And so anyway, that's something that I would go down to the beach and do for half an hour or 45 minutes every day.
That's awesome.
And then what else was I doing? I've been practicing so the last 5 years or so I've been learning Filipino martial art called Kali, from an amazing teacher in Canberra called Ray Galang. So I've been practicing with my sticks and my machete, doing my practicing my different Kali sort of stepping and cutting patterns as part of my ongoing fantasy role playing training. I've been training a lot with clubs. Have you ever got into this stuff, like with the clubs or the club bells
Yeah, I've done a little bit of club training once. I found a teacher where at a festival that I was at who was teaching that. But yeah, I
Oh, cool.
haven't done it much. I haven't trained it for a long period of time or anything.
Right. Yeah, so I really like it. So I've been doing a thing where I just set the timer for half an hour and just go nonstop for half an hour, with these beautiful sort of swinging circular patterns with the clubs. I've got a bunch of clubs of different sizes. So basically, I moved to Mullumbimby about 6 months ago, and I finally, for the first time in years, got like all my training gear in one place.
Awesome.
So I finally got like I've got like whatever it is, eight kettlebells of different sizes and like 8, 10 clubs of different sizes and all my sticks, and I've got my gymnastic ring set up, and I've got mats out on the deck, jigsaw mats, and so I can roll around on my deck. So and then I'm
Great.
living in the bush, so I can walk in the bush and do all this stuff and near the ocean. So I was having an awesome time before I got the Ross River fever. I was doing like hours of all this stuff every day. And then I got smashed with the virus and the arthritis, and dropped everything back to seated and standing meditation and pranayama and a bit of qigong. And so I've just been doing heaps of that stuff for the last few months, which is like every year or two, my practice gets really external. So the other thing I was doing before the virus came up was lots and lots of Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah,
So anyway,
awesome.
yeah, like I love BJJ. I've been doing heaps of that as much as I can, but obviously can't do any of it at the moment. But yeah, so then when I got sick, it was like, well, the wave sort of peaked of like 3 or 4 hours of like quite energetic external practice every day, and then it was like, oh, Ross River fever, my whole body hurts. I've got no energy. My guts are doing weird things. I'm getting headaches. Like my hips are in severe pain all day. And so I was like, okay, well, when I sit and do my seated meditation and stand still and do breathing practice, I feel amazing. So I'll just do lots of them. And I know that like they're the most healing practices that I know as well. So the last few months has been, another deep dive back into those practices, which is funny
Yeah.
because it's like I love movement practice so much, but it's like whenever I do fully dive back into my meditation practice, like I'm just reminded again of like, wow, like this stuff's so interesting and feels like, you know, it's like you could literally just, once you start to get the hang of what you're doing, you could literally just sit still for like 4 hours or however long a day. And like it rapidly becomes like so pleasant and so interesting and
Yeah,
so
that's
relaxing
interesting.
that like you almost stop wanting to do other things. It's like, oh, why would I even, you know, why would I even like do strength training, or why would I even like want to talk to my friends when I could just sit here and just feel like incredible, you know, and know that like if I do it even more, I'm going to feel even more incredible. So it's like, it's actually been perfect for the whole sort of coronavirus lockdown period. It's like, well, you know, all these other activities that I can't do, but I could like sit here perfectly still on my deck and feel awesome. So
Yeah, that's great. I love that you have a kind of a toolbox to draw from, or a such a history of exploring all these different practices and movement patterns, because many people would be perhaps in your situation stuck for what to do. But because you have spent so much time exploring this stuff, it's like if you get hit with Ross River fever, or if you are in lockdown, it's you can turn to these things in your toolkit of movement and meditation that you can just do whenever, whatever the circumstances. And I really love that. I love that idea and that concept.
yeah, it's pretty handy for sure, definitely. And like, I mean, these
Yeah.
days I'm a bit more balanced with things, I guess. Like I've never really been that much of a one for moderation, you know what I mean? Like when I was first, like in my 20s, living in India and living in Japan and Thailand and stuff, and like getting into meditation, and it was like, well, I'm just going to do heaps of meditation and like, you know, go to the other side of the world and leave all my friends behind and like start speaking in another language and just do this meditation stuff. And like, I wouldn't call my parents for months at a time, and they'd be like, Simon, we're a bit worried about you. Like, what's going on? you know, and then getting into Brazilian jiu-jitsu and just doing heaps of jiu-jitsu and all of that sort of stuff. And these days I'm actually, maybe I'm growing up a little bit, but now I'm like, yeah, like the meditation's great, but I know that if I like go for a walk every day and also like, you know, keep going with a bit of strength training with my kettlebells and like, you know, like read interesting things and, you know, go for a bit of a run or a bit of a swim and, you know, call up my friends and, you know, like try and, rather than necessarily smashing just one thing, now I try and kind of be a little bit more consistent with several basic things all at once. So always working on my strength training a little bit with my kettlebells and my gymnastics rings, and always working on my meditation and breathing stuff a little bit, and then always working on you know, fitness and like walking and running and swimming, and you know what I mean? I try and cover my bases a little bit more broadly these days, yeah, rather than just getting too obsessed with one thing.
Yeah, I love that. That's great. It's good to have balance, eh?
Yeah, it's good to have balance, but it's also like good to like get really excited about something and just like, if you've got, that was what I always figured when I was going really obsessive about these things. I was like, look, I'm so passionate about this stuff, and I'm so beautifully, beautifully blessed to have the opportunity to do it and be like, look, man, among all my friends who I grew up with talking about martial arts and stuff and meditation and stuff. And it's like, look, I've got the opportunity to go live in Japan or China. And if I don't do it, if I don't take that opportunity and get really excited and go really hard and do it, like, then who's going to do it? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, awesome. So you mentioned some of the stuff you do with ancestral movement before. Can you just break down for people what that is or how you coach it and just give, like, why did you create this thing or this idea of ancestral movement and what is it and how do you coach it and what are some of the practices that you do around this idea of ancestral movement?
Okay. I guess how it started. So as a kid, growing up in New Zealand and, you know, running around in the forest and whatever, and I had a bit of a science education in school and so on, and at some point I started to just get really curious about this, just the human story, I guess, just going like, so where did we come from? Where did humans come from? What do people mean by the words history and the words prehistory? What's prehistory? And then like, where did ancient humans come from? And what happened before that? And what happened before that? And just this realization that the story that we have is like really just based on fragments, you know, like the archaeology is it's impossible to form anything remotely complete in the story that we can get from archaeology or you know, discovering genetics and all of that sort of stuff, and going like, oh wow, like, so history because we sort of learn history in school as if it's something that we know, as if this is what, you know, history is known. We aren't taught history as if it's like, look, most of it is completely unknown and very mysterious. Here's a few little fragments of what we've been able to work out.
Yeah.
You know, which is so much more inspiring, especially to a young person, right? It's like, oh, wow, it's like really full on, like Indiana Jones kind of lost.
Yeah, totally.
Crazy stuff. And so, you know, I started getting really into that from quite a young age. And then doing yoga and things. And then when I was around 19 or 20, I started, I was at university and I was studying biological anthropology. So human evolution and like, it's just biological anthropology is like, I was studying cultural anthropology as well, but biological anthropology really grabbed me of the study of humans. It's like a primatologist's approach to studying the human species. Like you study the humans as the human species as a particular branch of the primate family, and everything associated with that. And I was like, wow, this is sick. This is what I've always wanted to be doing. And then at the same time as studying biological anthropology and cultural anthropology, I was also studying a bunch of different martial arts, like including Japanese jiu-jitsu and Brazilian capoeira, both of which involve a lot of tumbling and rolling and cartwheeling and handstanding and basically monkey kind of movement. And I was living in Australia by this time and spending a lot of time in the bush and climbing trees and, you know, getting lost in the bush at night and climbing up and down, you know, all these sorts of things, and just getting really into all this stuff, which I started to think of in terms of monkey body training. And like, because I was doing yoga as well, and I started learning Tai Chi, and I was learning, you know, all these ones which have very strict posturals, which I love. But then the monkey body training was something that I looked at as being like, oh, like, this is like the kind of natural side of human movement, which is like, because we're a bunch of apes, we've got all these ape movements, sort of innate in our bodies. And then over the years of doing different sorts of movement practice, like the monkey body training was kind of my own personal thing, and I'd do bouncing and jumping and hanging and climbing and swinging and tumbling and rolling and cartwheeling and kind of mixing the realms of capoeira and jiu-jitsu and aikido and those sorts of things. But then at the same time, I was also doing a lot of yogic pranayama and Taoist qigong and Taoist practices, which at some point started to really induce these spinal movements, like waves and undulations moving through the spine. And as soon as this started happening, it really grabbed me. Like I had this back and forth of like learning some traditional practices, whether it was pranayama or some sort of like Chinese movement involving like cycling the awareness up the back of the spine and down the front of the body and up the back and down the front, round and around in a circuit, and these sorts of things. I'd learn a traditional practice, and of course I was, you know, practicing under different teachers, but then also experimenting on my own. And often I'd go off into the bush, into the forest, and do a bunch of practice and start doing maybe some of the traditional practice, and then just let it carry me into free experimentation. And that free experimentation would often be like, it'd be totally stuff that I wouldn't do if there was anyone else around, you know what I mean? I might be like, it'd probably look like I had some sort of mental illness, you know what I mean? Like rocking and wobbling and and like doing weird wave movements of the spine over and over and over, and you know, my eyes rolling back in my head. Who knows what I looked like?
Yeah.
Who knows what I looked like, and breath holds, and you know, just it was just basically you could look at it as like the kind of experimentation which led to the development of what we now know as yoga or pranayama or qigong or whatever. So I just like I'd start something and then see where it took me. And a lot of where it took me was into these like really, really interesting spinal movements. And I'd just be like, what's going on with these spinal movements, these spinal waves and these sort of undulations, and why do they feel meaningful? Firstly, why would they be blissful? Why do they feel meaningful? Why are these movements in my spine almost like they're wanting to emerge when I'm out in nature and no one's looking at me, so I don't feel ashamed? And what's going on there? And I just had no idea what was going on for years and years and years. And then with a background in evolutionary biology, I gradually started to realize that a lot of these spinal movements that I was doing are the same movements that you see in the crawling patterns of a lizard or the locomotion pattern of a worm or a caterpillar or a dolphin swimming through the water or a fish swimming through the water. Or, you know, and I started to notice, oh, these spinal waves, it's the same spinal wave inherent in the swimming motion of a fish, in the walking pattern of a lizard, in the crawling pattern of a baby, and then in the upright walking pattern of an adult human. I was like, wow, that's cool. And then seeing that the other basic spinal movement is the same as the crawling pattern of a caterpillar or some kinds of caterpillar, and then the same crawling pattern of is then manifest in the galloping motion of a mammal, and then the same spinal pattern as the galloping motion of a mammal is the swimming pattern of a dolphin or a whale. And going like, oh wow, like the way evolution works, and this is something that I knew intellectually, that the way evolution works is not by getting rid of what came before, but by taking what's already there and modifying it slightly, or being modified by the current circumstances. You know what I mean? Evolution, it gets what you've got at the moment, and then what you've got at the moment in terms of a body and behavior interacts with the current ecology and the current environmental circumstances and selects like slight modifications which are slightly more useful in the current situation. And so then in the body and in the evolution of movement, realizing, oh, new movement patterns are always modifications of the old patterns, and the old patterns are still there, they're just modified. And then realizing, wow, so that means that the entire evolutionary history of the human species is still there in my body, not just in my anatomy, but in movement patterns. So all of the history of the movements of four limbs in my lineage are contained in not just the anatomy of my four limbs, but in the neurology, the movement patterns embedded in the spinal cord, the movement patterns embedded in the motor centers of the brain interacting with the motor nerves of the spine and the motor nerves all the way down to the fingertips. And going, oh wow, there's all of these movements buried in the human body, which are like a record of our entire ancestral lineage. And lots of them are just, or most of them, are just not given the opportunity to emerge. Firstly, yeah. they might not be demanded by our current environment, where we're no longer running and jumping and hiding and tracking animals and sneaking through the forest at night all day, every day. So nature is no longer demanding a lot of those ancestral movement patterns from us, but then also culture is also maybe suppressing lots of them because they are patterns which remind us of our nature as animals and our connection and similarity to and deep relationship with all of these other animals. And so these, you know, movement patterns and behavior patterns, which are very, very animal, have been suppressed by our culture for potentially for thousands of years.
Yeah.
So I just, God, this is all stuff that, like, it took me, you know, it all sort of clicked. It all clicked over a period of a couple of months, and I was walking around just nodding to myself going like, oh, wow, it's all in there. Oh, my God, it's all in there, and it's just suppressed. It's suppressed, but it wants to emerge if it's given the opportunity. And so I started thinking, oh, so, okay, how does it get expressed in different cultures? And you go, oh, like, it might emerge as yoga in one culture or as animal style kung fu in another culture or as, you know, capoeira Angola in another culture or as Haitian, like, voodoo spirit possession with, like, crazy spinal waves as they explicitly say their bodies are being taken over by the spirits of the ancestors to the sounds of the drum, you know what I mean? And going like, wow, it's all in there if we can just try to find ways to get in there and let it come out.
Yeah, totally. I love that.
So that
why,
was
why do you you go, sorry.
Oh, I was just gonna say that was sort of how I discovered the concept. Or discovered words for the concept, if you like.
Sure. Yeah, that's cool. Coming back to the suppression thing, why do you think that culture or a lot of societies have suppressed this sense of connection to animal, who we are as animals? Like, why has that come about in recent history, do you think?
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it is a bit of a favorite topic of mine. And we can only really speculate. But like, there's a lot of stuff in there in terms, you know, you could go on and on about the influence of Christianity, for example. And Christianity being, you know, the last 2,000 years, but like coming out of. So it seems like the city building cultures have gone through a long process of the deliberate kind of separation of humans from the rest of the natural world, if you like. So you could say, okay, the agricultural, you know, the so-called like Neolithic agricultural revolution, where humans, where more and more humans around the world started to live sedentary, like as in non-nomadic, like settled existence, and took up farming and then acquired a surplus of food, and with a large surplus of food and a sedentary life, that led to increased specialization. So not everyone was fully engaged with the forest and with the animals and stuff in the same way anymore, and then building increasingly more complex and large houses and cities where the deliberate purpose of the house is to keep nature out of the house. You know what I mean? Because insects are annoying and snakes can kill you and spiders are poisonous and, you know, all these sorts of like flies get in the food and make the food go bad. And so you want to keep nature out of the house. And so you build a better and better house to keep nature out. And then humans start like, you know, reading and writing, and, you know, getting into like more and more abstract kinds of thinking, and the more we shut nature out and then living in bigger and bigger cities, it becomes more of a like self-referential loop where humans are just interacting with other humans, talking to other humans, thinking about what other humans are doing, thinking about what other humans are thinking about us in our human built structures, you know, and the whole story becomes based around humans with an active denial, like all these things of like only humans are the ones with souls. You know what I mean? Only humans can go to heaven. Only humans are conscious and intelligent, and the rest of the natural world was put here by God or by the gods or whatever for human exploitation. All of this sort of stuff. And then the most recent incarnate, maybe not the most recent, but you know, the recent incarnation of the concept of the mechanistic universe, which evolved in, or which grew out of the Renaissance and led to the scientific revolution, where it's like now they think, you know, now there's the idea that like all of nature is just a giant machine and consciousness is illusory, and now even humans don't actually have consciousness. It's just an illusion of consciousness, and it's all actually just a giant robot. You know, so that was the big like Darwin's theory of evolution, and then the mechanistic universe like took that whole rationale to its logical conclusion that, oh shit, not even humans have souls. Oh, right. You know. So it's like it came back around and it was like, oh wow, humans are actually animals just like all the rest, of course. But then it's like, oh God, if animals don't have souls and humans are just animals, then humans don't have souls either. So anyway, there's a whole bunch of influences in there, I think, which just, you know, a lot of it's like really, really logical and natural, but I think a lot of it is coming out of these civilizations that were doing everything they could to separate from the aspects of nature which were dangerous and which could kill us, controlling the weather, controlling, you know, all that sort of stuff, but then also separating ourselves from every aspect of nature which was even a tiny bit inconvenient. And then we look at nature as just being sort of scenery, you know, and yeah, think of us humans as being so special, humans being the center of, you know, the earth being the center of the universe and humans being chosen by God and all of this sort of stuff. I feel like we've got thousands of years of conditioning still active in us, in you and me, where we think that we've been taught to think that we're different. Yeah. Different, if you know what I mean. And of course we are different. Like everything in nature is different and unique in its own way. But part of what I'm trying to do with the ancestral movement thing is really explore and really highlight every similarity that we can possibly find between us and all of these other species, including plants, including like rock or compost or all these things, and really explore all of the similarities. And then that can also help us feel and see more clearly those few amazing, unique differences that we have in our species.
Yeah, I love that. And I guess it also helps us see how connected we are to the natural world and how inseparable the human animal is from the rest of nature.
Totally. And like, you know, like I spent many years, particularly in my 20s, engaged with different forms of activism, like political, you know, political and environmental activism of different sorts. And so I'm still very much an activist. And I do feel very strongly that our current culture of like exploitation of natural resources in a very destructive way and a very, you know, just over the top consumerism, and part of this thing of us thinking we're so special is thinking that like there's no limit to what we can do and what we can destroy, and that, you know, we can just destroy our home and kill all of our family in order to, like, you know, whatever, like have a fancy hat or get to work like 20 seconds faster, or, you know, all this, there's all this stuff where I'm like, yeah, full on. I think it's meaningless, out of control bullshit. And so part of my work is as an activist to be like, hey, like, you know, convenience is awesome and like fancy hats are great, but like we can also extract like a whole lot of meaning. We can get a whole lot of meaning from life by engaging with the natural world in these different ways, and engaging with the body in different ways. And so part of my agenda with the ancestral movement thing is to, like, if we do a bunch of movement practices which really help us feel really, really clearly that we are primates, we have the body of a primate, and then do a whole bunch of movement practices which show, hey, look, beneath the body of a primate, we have a whole bunch of movement patterns common to all mammals, a whole bunch of body structures common to all mammals. And then we do a bunch of other movement practices which show, hey, look, beneath the warm sort of skin and body hair and movement patterns of a primate and a mammal, we have some fundamental locomotor and behavioral and anatomical patterns that are identical to those of a reptile and a fish and a worm, you know, the digestive tube from mouth to anus with the peristaltic motion of food, identical to that of a worm. And if we do these practices which help us feel the reality of our shared ancestry with all these other creatures, then we can start to do these practices of going like I like to offer the practice of thinking of our ancestors not as them, but as us. And if we switch our head from thinking of the ancestors as those people who did that stuff, if we switch our head and go, that was us, and then you go, oh, we spread across the planet, and some of us ended up in Ireland, and some of us ended up in India, and some of us ended up in Patagonia, and some of us colonized the Pacific in sea canoes, and some of us came to, you know, the continent of Australia and Papua New Guinea and stuff, like over countless eons, and all of us spread around, and we start to get this different sense. It's no longer us and them. You don't think, oh, my ancestors versus your ancestors, or us versus them. You think, oh, we have done all of this, and you go, oh, fuck, we're actually family. We're not a metaphorical sort of feel good hippie family. We're actually literally blood family. You know what I mean? And it's like this total different shift of your head. And then you trace it even further back, and you go, oh, some of us came down out of the trees and started walking on two legs and then spread across the rest of the planet. Some of us stayed in the ancestral forests in Africa and became chimpanzees, gorillas. Some of us, you know, moved through the forests to Southeast Asia and became orangutans. And you keep going back and you go, oh, some of us came out on land 350 million years ago and became reptiles and mammals and amphibians and frogs and snakes and, you know, birds. But some of us stayed in the ocean and are still swimming around in the ocean as fish. You get what I'm saying? And if we do this thing of like thinking it was we did this rather than they, then we can get this deepening sense of like, oh, like all of us are literally blood family. All of us creatures living on the earth today are literally relatives.
And yeah, I'm advocating
saying it over and over and over again, because it's such a huge concept that it's so easy to just say the words and then set it aside. But if we say it over and over again and keep trying to think about it more, that me and this frangipani tree on my left are actually family, that we are descendants of the same individual great 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 grandparents. And some of us went on to become frangipani trees, and some of us went on to become Homo sapiens. You know, it completely changes for me my sense of the world, of going, I'm walking in the forest with my family everywhere I go.
Yeah, I love that. That is so cool. That's an amazing shift in worldview and an amazing way for people to feel connected to the natural world. It's like everything around us is literally family. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that.
That's one of my favorite things.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see, yeah, the passion, and it gave me goosebumps just you kind of sharing that then.
it gives me goosebumps every time, man. Every time. Yeah,
for sure. It's a whole, because I know that intellectually, but I don't necessarily think about it on that deeper level all the time. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take that into this day and try and remind myself of that on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Nice.
So as we wrap up, is there anything else that you wanted to share or touch on before we finish the recording?
Oh, golly. I'm not sure. Is anything, you know, was there anything that's come up for you?
I think
you'd like to go into a little bit more?
No, I think what you just finished on there was an amazing point and a great way for a great thing for people to walk away with. In terms of just shifting that worldview. Like, I love what you shared there. So there's nothing on my end. I think, yeah, like the last little bit that you shared was great.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. I guess that's, you know, that's... The take home kind of message of all of that.
Yeah.
For sure. I'd like to sort of bring it back to is like if we do that practice of like, and it does start with thinking of our ancestors as us rather than them, and then continuing to trace that back and realizing that, you know, it's been us all along. That's the shift. It has been us all along since the very beginning of life. We've been here.
Yeah.
And our families have been spreading and interacting and, you know, having our family squabbles and killing each other and loving each other and looking after each other. But it has been us the whole time. Yeah. And that it always will be. And we can, for me, that's a great comfort. And it's a huge source of strength and power, and realizing that, oh, this little character that's been given the name Simon, he's just this tiny, tiny little sort of being that's along for the ride. And the body, the body is ancient in a way that Simon's little neurology associated with the character of Simon can never grasp that, but the body and nature have this like ancient wisdom and power and knowledge and language, which is constantly active, you know.
Yeah.
And so if Simon can be here and enjoy being here and, like, you know, nudge things in different directions and make some choices and decide what he wants to eat and, you know, be nice to his friends and whatever, then that's cool. But also, like, Simon can just, like, when he remembers, can just kick back and, like, bask in this incredible, like, flow of life.
Yeah.
And know also that that we have strength and resources and wisdom and power far more than we give ourselves credit for, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love it. So good. Yeah. Thanks, man, for coming on. I really appreciate it. In closing, where can people connect with you and find more of your work?
Oh, yeah. So ancestralmovement.com is my website. Ancestral Movement, we have a Facebook group, which is quite active, and a Facebook page, which is less active because I'm a bit too lazy to work the algorithms. Even joined Instagram a few months ago. So we'll be sharing a lot more there. And those are my main platforms, is Instagram and Facebook and my website, and YouTube as well, Ancestral Movement on YouTube.
Great.
I'm still very, very selfishly focused on my own practice and then on working with people in person. So but now with this coronavirus situation, I've got a bunch more online things in the works, which should hopefully be emerging over the next weeks and months. So yeah, if people want to follow that, then maybe we'll be able to work together even virtually in the near future.
Awesome, man. That's great. And you also, I forgot to touch on this, but you also run retreats, which is an awesome opportunity for people to get along to. Could you share just a little bit maybe about those retreats?
Yeah, sure. So we have been for the past 6 or 7 years running them 3 or 4 times a year. The classic, if you like, is this one that we run regularly at a spot down in Araluen, southern New South Wales in Australia, in the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful bush down there. Obviously that's all on hold at the moment, but can't wait till we get to run the next one. We basically just go, we camp in the bush for a week and we're all sleeping in the forest, and we set up a big communal kitchen, and we've built an enormous adults jungle gym, sort of primate monkey playground, and there's a beautiful river and rocks and forest, and we practice all sorts of movement and meditation and nature connection stuff, and primitive skills and survival skills, learning bush tucker and how to make fire, and animal tracking and archery. And we get in different guest teachers every time, teaching us everything from juggling and contact improv to wrestling and jiu-jitsu and hide tanning, and you know, how to make sauerkraut, and so many different things. To keep it fresh with the, you know, the different guest teachers every time is an amazing aspect of it. And mostly we just have like 8 days in the bush together with no electricity and no clocks. And we do hours of movement practice and also, like, you know, it's like we train, of course, we train a lot, but it's also like it's a very nurturing sort of our mission with the retreats is really about like connection and nurturing, rather than like being like elite survival warriors, if you know what I mean. It's like, it's as much about learning to weave a basket and hanging out by the fire, talking to beautiful people, and resting in a hammock or halfway up a tree during the heat of the day, and seeing the light change. It's as much about all of that as it is like, you know, some people are doing just all the movement practice and lifting rocks and wrestling and climbing and, you know, getting really, really strong and muscly. But like, that's only a few people, if you know what I mean. Like, most of us are like sinking into the rhythms of the natural world. And that's part of why we do it, like summer, autumn, winter, spring, you know, to in the same spot, to sink into the flow of the seasons and the flow, the rhythms of the body, and get that sense of like a huge amount of learning and a huge amount of physical growth and perceiving the body differently, but perceiving the whole world differently and getting that really sense of like deep rest and feeling more and more at home in the natural world and in the body. So yeah, the retreats are amazing, man. I hope this isolation situation doesn't go on too much longer, and when I think back, yeah. Oh, it was so good. We're just going on retreat every few months, and things were great, weren't they? Yeah. So yeah, hopefully we can
so get back to
that again soon.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can't wait to get along to another one. They're amazing for people listening, and anyone living in Australia or traveling to Australia, they're an incredible thing to get along to, and I highly recommend them. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Simon, for sharing your time and sharing your knowledge and wisdom with us. It was epic to have you on.
Thanks, Jake. Yeah, real pleasure.
Cool. So that was an epic conversation. As I mentioned in the show, all the links to connect with Simon and myself as well are going to be in the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, then please take a screenshot and tag us and share it on Instagram. Really love to hear your feedback on this episode. And if you're getting value out of the show in general and you haven't already, please go over to iTunes or whatever platform you subscribe to podcasts on and leave us a rating and a review. It really helps with getting this message out to more people. So again, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Really appreciate you listening. Hope you got value out of today's episode, and I will catch you on the next episode of Move Wild Podcast coming out on Friday.